The adult performer known as Stormy Daniels taking the stand in Trump's so-called hush money trial today. Our legal correspondent Arlene Richards has details of her testimony.
MIT will no longer ask faculty applicants to make DEI pledges. What the school's president now says about forced diversity statements.
Attorney General Merrick Garland could be held in contempt of Congress. More about a House committee resolution connected with President Biden's interviews on classified information.
Social Security funds are expected to hit major issues in 2035, and Medicare trust fund reserves are expected to be depleted 5 years later than it forecasted. What this means for your scheduled benefits.
Today marks the 200th anniversary of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. To celebrate, Berlin's State Library displays the original score, annotated by Beethoven himself.
This is NTD News Today, live from our NTD global headquarters. Here are Stephania Cox and Chris Beers.
Adult film actress Stormy Daniels took the stand today in former President Trump's criminal trial.
Here's the former president commenting on media reports of the ongoing trial.
Some of the statements made about this witch hunt on CNN, fake news CNN, Michael Moore said the proof of falsifying records has not been accomplished. On Good Morning America, they said, we heard that expense payments to lawyers are legal expenses. Also, NBC Today Show, the challengers, that there is no smoking gun, no email or tape to prove the president's intent. They don't have a way to prove that. That's NBC Today Show. And then Fox News, Katie Chersky, said that the gag order is unconstitutional, which of course it is. The gag order is unconstitutional. So with all that's going on, they have no case.
Former President Trump is now back in a Manhattan courtroom for what could be called a dramatic day of testimony.
Earlier this morning, publisher Sally Franklin briefly took the stand, but the focus of the day is the testimony of the prosecution's key witness, Stormy Daniels.
And we turn now to our legal correspondent, Arlene Richards, outside the courthouse with the latest.
Arlene, this may be a tough day for the former president as he faces the woman who he is at, who's at the heart of this case. What can you tell us about Ms. Daniels' testimony so far?
Daniels has alleged.
Well, as a former adult film star, Stormy Daniels is a colorful witness. She walked into the courtroom today wearing all black with her sunglasses on her forehead. Now, she talked very fast during her testimony so far, as there is a break going on right now. But she spoke very fast, and the prosecution and the judge had to tell her to slow down. Now, she started off talking about her background, and she testified that she came from a very low-income family that had some problems. But she managed to graduate from high school in the top 10, and she was also given a scholarship to Texas A&M, but she never completed college. She says she turned to the world of exotic dance and adult film after one of her friends encouraged her, and she thought that she could make a lot of money.
Okay, now Daniels has alleged that she had a one-night stand with Trump and that this is what prosecutors say he paid her to keep quiet about. Since there are some credibility issues with this witness, how did the prosecution try to get around that?
I think they're trying to use her testimony right now to show the jury that she was in fact in Trump's hotel suite with him alone. Now, she talked about how she met him at a celebrity golf event and that she was distributing adult films at that event and that she made sure that Trump got one of her best films. She says he later asked her out to dinner, which she first rejected, but then later she accepted. She then goes on to describe how she arrived at the hotel and went to the penthouse suite where the door was on a crack. And then she opened the door to see him there greeting her in what she said were silk or satin pajamas. She later then goes into recounting and describing in detail how the suite looked. talking about the furniture, where the furniture was positioned, the size of the rooms, and the location of all the different things in that room. And so this is how I think the prosecution right now is trying to show that she was there in his hotel suite, although they haven't yet gotten to an actual affair.
Arlene, how helpful will Stormy Daniels' testimony be to the prosecution's case?
Well, in terms of showing the jury that Trump had a desire to cover up an alleged affair before the 2016 campaign, I think her testimony will be very helpful. But on the other hand, as a lot of legal experts have said, her testimony is not going to help very much with their key claim in this case, which is that he falsified business records. Back to you.
All right. Thank you for that update, Arlene. And coming up, deadly tornadoes, hail, and wind gusts hit the Great Plains. We have more on the damage in Oklahoma and elsewhere.
And abortion is in the spotlight in Idaho. More on a courtroom battle over minors crossing state lines for an abortion without parental consent.
What are the worst cities in the U.S. to drive in? Well, not New York or Los Angeles, as you might have thought. Find out more in just a moment here on NTD News Today. Turning now to updates on the Israel-Hamas war.
Israeli tanks are entering Rafah as an Israeli delegation heads to Cairo for ceasefire talks.
The war cabinet unanimously decided Israel will continue its operation in Rafah in order to apply military pressure on Hamas to release our hostages and achieve all the war's objectives. Despite Hamas's grandstanding, Hamas's proposal is far from Israel's core demands. Nevertheless, Israel will dispatch a ranking delegation to Egypt to maximize any chance of an agreement on terms acceptable to Israel.
Israeli forces today took control of the Gaza side of the Rafah border crossing. The point of entry has been key to delivering humanitarian aid, but Israel said terrorists have also been using the crossing.
An Israeli source told NBC that this is a very limited operation to put pressure on Hamas during ceasefire talks, and that it's not the start of the ground offensive Israel has promised.
People in Gaza continue to flee Rafah following evacuation orders. The Israeli military said the vast majority of people in eastern Rafah have evacuated.
CIA Director William Burns is in Cairo, along with Israeli delegates for ceasefire and hostage negotiations. A major disagreement is over whether the 33 hostages released in the first round would be living or dead. Hamas said they could include dead bodies, while Israel demands living hostages.
And moments ago at the Capitol, President Biden delivered the keynote address at the Holocaust Memorial Museum's Days of Remembrance ceremony.
But there is no place on any campus in America, any place in America, for anti-Semitism or hate speech or threats of violence of any kind, whether against Jews or anyone else. Violent attacks, destroying property, is not peaceful protest. It's against the law. And we are not a lawless country. We're a civil society. We uphold the rule of law, and no one should have to hide or be brave just to be themselves.
The event honors the 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust and recommits to heeding the lessons of that dark chapter with the words, never again.
Biden addressed the horrors of October 7th, as well as what he called the alarming rise in anti-Semitism that followed in the U.S.
His speech comes as the NYPD arrested 24 protesters during the anti-Israel march toward the Met Gala last night.
The protesters marched to Central Park, defaced a World War I memorial, and placed a Palestinian flag over a Civil War monument. One person is dead, and more were injured when a tornado tore through Oklahoma. Thousands are without power following destructive storms in the Great Plains.
The area between Barnesdall and Bartlesville, north of Tulsa, were both most hard hit. Video footage shows the storm touching down late Monday. The twister damaged dozens of homes.
This is the second tornado that hit the town of Barnsdall in just 5 weeks. Tornado damage was also reported in Sullivan, Missouri, and DeKalb County, Tennessee.
Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska all experienced hail and strong wind gusts. The weather forecast shows thunderstorms moving north today into the Midwest and the Tennessee Valley.
Outage trackers show that about 10,000 people are still without power as of right now. Attorney General Merrick Garland could be held in contempt of Congress. The House Judiciary Committee is scheduled to mark up a resolution, according to the Epoch Times, citing sources familiar with the situation. This comes after Garland refused to hand over audio tapes of President Biden's interview regarding classified information.
The committee will discuss and amend the resolution before sending it to the House floor. Whether Speaker Mike Johnson will bring it for a vote remains uncertain.
A pair of House committees issued subpoenas to the Justice Department on February 27th. They demand transcripts and recordings from Robert Hur's probe into President Biden's handling of classified documents.
The Justice Department argues against handing over the tapes, saying transcripts suffice. The standoff has led to repeated threats of contempt proceedings.
Meanwhile, Hur's report concluded that prosecuting Biden was unwarranted, citing evidential and cognitive factors. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene says talks to possibly remove House Speaker Mike Johnson will continue.
The Georgia Congresswoman is leading an effort to mobilize hardline conservatives against Johnson. That sentiment intensified last month when he helped pass a major foreign aid package with assistance for Ukraine.
Greene met with Johnson for 2 hours yesterday, but would not say what they discussed.
I have been patient, I have been diligent, I have been steady, and I have been focused on the facts. And none of that has changed. So I just had a long discussion with the Speaker in his office about ways to move forward for a Republican-controlled House of Representatives.
I had a lengthy, constructive meeting, I think, with Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene. I just want to say, and I told them, and I've said this repeatedly, that I understand the frustration, I share it. I would really like to advance much more of our conservative policy on a daily basis here, but the reality is we are working with the smallest majority in U.S. history with a one-vote margin.
The two lawmakers said they will meet again today based on Monday's discussion.
Greene says she plans to push a vote on ousting Johnson this week. If she goes through with that, it's unlikely to succeed. Democratic leaders in the chamber have said they will vote to kill the effort.
Many Republicans are also opposed to the move. They don't want to see their party distracted by infighting, like when Kevin McCarthy was ousted from the same role last year. And Indiana is holding primaries today. Several congressional district contests and the race for governor are garnering the most attention. The leading candidate to replace term-limited Governor Eric Holcomb and is Trump-backed Senator Mike Braun.
An April poll showed Braun with a large lead over multiple challengers, even though he faced criticism in the past for supporting the Black Lives Matter movement and saying he would join their march.
With Braun running for governor, Republicans have united behind Congressman Jim Banks to replace him in the U.S. Senate.
The most notable House races on the ballot are the Republican primaries in the 3rd District, which Banks is giving up to run for Senate, as well as the 5th, 6th, and 8th districts. Tiffany Smiley, a Republican and veteran advocate, enters the race for Washington's 4th Congressional District. She aims to unseat Congressman Dan Newhouse, one of 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Trump.
Smiley has criticized Newhouse's impeachment vote, although she didn't mention it in her campaign announcement. Instead, her platform is to combat government dysfunction and prioritize fiscal responsibility.
She also emphasizes border security, linking it to national security about illegal immigration and drug trafficking.
Besides Newhouse, Smiley must also contend with a Trump-endorsed candidate in the primary, Navy veteran Jared Sessler. And MIT will no longer ask faculty applicants to make DEI pledges. The school's president says people shouldn't be forced to submit a statement about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mandatory DEI statements have become increasingly common in academic job applications. A 2021 study found that 19% of colleges require diversity statements. Elite schools were found to be 21% more likely to require them.
MIT is now the first elite school to backtrack on that. The decision is being made by President Sally Kornbluth and backed by a number of officials within the school.
Kornbluth says she's still committed to fostering an inclusive environment, but emphasizes that mandatory statements hurt free speech and that they don't work. And Idaho is asking a federal appeals court to revive a 2023 abortion law. The law makes it illegal to assist a minor to cross state lines for an abortion without parental consent. The legislation was blocked by a judge in November. The judge ruled that the law violated free speech rights and lacked clarity on what constitutes illegal abortion trafficking.
Idaho argues abortion advocate groups lack legal standing to bring the case and that the state has the right to protect parental rights.
Idaho bans almost all abortions, with exceptions to save the mother's life and for rape or incest that is reported to police. However, the state borders Washington, Oregon, and Montana, which all allow more abortions.
Abortion groups argue the law infringes on interstate travel and First Amendment rights. Social Security and Medicare won't be able to fully pay benefits starting in just over a decade, according to a new report. The annual report from the Entitlement Program's trustees says if Congress doesn't address the pending shortfalls, there will be fewer options. The report says the combined Social Security trust funds are expected to be exhausted in 2035. Following that, payroll tax revenue and other income sources will only be able to cover 83% of benefits owed. Meanwhile, Medicare funds are expected to be able to cover scheduled inpatient hospital benefits until 2036. In 2023, around 67 million Americans received Social Security benefits. Both President Biden and former President Trump have promised during their campaigns to protect Social Security and Medicare.
And a Tennessee-based company is being fined for illegally hiring children to clean meat processing plants. Fayette Janitorial Service agreed to pay over $600,000 in civil penalties. In the court-ordered mandate, the company also agreed to no longer employ minors.
A federal investigation found they illegally hired at least two dozen children to clean dangerous meat processing facilities in Iowa and Virginia. Federal law prohibits minors to work in meat processing plants because of the hazards.
The Labor Department alleged that Fayette used 15 underage workers at a plant in Virginia and at least nine in Iowa.
The work included cleaning head splitters, jaw pullers, and meat band saws. One 14-year-old was severely injured while working at the plant in Virginia. As for Boeing's commercial plane division, the Federal Aviation Administration has details on a new investigation. It says Boeing employees may have neglected some inspections for the 787 Dreamliner jets. The FAA wants to figure out if the inspections did actually happen or if employees falsified records. Regulators say a Boeing engineer came forward publicly last month with quality control allegations about several Boeing models, including the Dreamliner. The Boeing executive overseeing the 787 program shared an internal memo with CNN. In it, he wrote that the issue is an instance of misconduct, but not an immediate flight safety issue. During the investigation, the FAA says Boeing employees will inspect the Dreamliners not yet delivered to airline customers.
And Boeing's Starliner isn't going to space just yet. NASA postponed yesterday's launch of the first manned test flight. NASA said there's a problem with the Atlas V rocket that carries the Starliner. The mission was scrubbed just 2 hours before liftoff, with two crew members strapped in and waiting for the countdown. The Starliner capsule was going to take the two astronauts to the International Space Station.
A spokesman said a pressure relief valve on the Atlas rocket started fluttering open and closed, making a loud sound. The valve might need to be replaced, delaying the launch until next week.
Engineers will determine if the valve is still usable. The launch team could try again as soon as Friday. And the worst city in the United States to drive in may not be your first guess. It's not New York, nor Los Angeles. The worst city in the U.S. to drive in overall is Oakland, California. That's according to a recent study from Forbes Advisor. The study looked at 47 metro areas and considered a number of metrics, including driving experience, safety, cost of car ownership, and access to car maintenance. Oakland got the top spot for several reasons: a high number of fatal crashes, high gas prices, and long average commute times. Miami was the second worst city to drive in, followed by San Francisco, Houston, and Philadelphia. As for the best city to drive in, according to Forbes advisor, it's Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh earned good marks for safety, driving experience, and cost of vehicle ownership. In breaking news, we just learned that TikTok is taking legal action against the U.S. government. That's to block a law forcing the app's Chinese owner to sell or face a ban.
The lawsuit argues that the bill violates free speech rights protected by the Constitution. TikTok argues that alleging national security concerns alone does not justify limitations on free speech.
The lawsuit states that Congress hasn't provided evidence to justify the law or prove any specific harm caused by TikTok.
The U.S. law gives China's ByteDance until January 19th to sell TikTok, but the legal proceedings are expected to delay any potential ban or sale of the app for years.
And coming up, two Ukrainian security officials allegedly planned to kill President Volodymyr Zelensky. The charges against them and other details we know so far.
Britain suspects that China is behind the hacking of the armed forces payroll system. Details and updates on the military cyber attack.
An Australian military helicopter has to dodge flares from a Chinese fighter jet. The Australian Prime Minister calls the incident unacceptable. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today.
Welcome back. Ukrainian artillery units are being pinned down by Russian attack drones. That's amid a critical shell shortage as Ukraine awaits shipments from the U.S. military aid package. Here's the story.
This hulking German-supplied howitzer rumbles out of its forest hideout. It only has a few minutes to fire before slipping back under cover to evade Russian surveillance in the skies above. Ukrainian artillery units are playing a cat-and-mouse game to avoid Russian drones hunting high-value weapons like this self-propelled Panzerhaubitze 2000. Crews, including the 43rd Artillery Brigade, say they face increasing harassment from enemy drones, now a staple of Russia's arsenal. This battery commander, who goes by the callsign Lyova, says his unit had been directly hit four times by Russian high-tech attack drones.
They use a lot more strike drones, like Privet 82. They have different variations of Lancet drones, which were upgraded. They have cumulative high-explosive warheads. There were attacks before, but not the same amount. Now it's really scary.
Western-supplied artillery, like the German howitzer, is a priority target for Moscow. It has pledged to focus its strikes on these types of weapons.
The situation has become more difficult because they have a lot of electronic warfare equipment. They don't allow our birds to fly over their territory. Thus, it's harder to detect targets and hit them. The other reason are their kamikaze strike drones. They have an abundance of Zala and Orlan drones. Sometimes it happens that there's lots of work for the day, but we can't move because something is always flying above. If these birds could be shot down or jammed, we'd be more effective and could work more.
Like other Ukrainian artillery units, the 43rd Brigade faces a critical shell shortage that limits the howitzer's potential, forcing it to fire far fewer shells per day. Ukrainian troops across the sprawling front are anxiously awaiting shipments from a long-delayed $61 billion U.S. military aid package. Repairing the vehicle is also a challenge. The availability of spare parts is limited, and the navigation system frequently malfunctions and is difficult to fix on the battlefield. Stavnichi, like many others, is calling for more electronic warfare systems to jam the Russian drones.
The main problem here is spare parts and shells. But even if there were parts and shells, you'd have the problem of enemy birds. So everything needs to work together in a system: electronic warfare and surveillance, artillery. Then our hit percentage would be much higher. This is what I think.
And now we have some short headlines from Russia, the UK, and other European countries. U.S. officials say an American soldier has been detained in Russia since last week. He was reportedly stationed in South Korea and traveled to Russia on his own.
Moscow authorities accused him of stealing from a woman and arrested him on charges of, quote, criminal misconduct.
The U.S. Army said his family has been told about the situation, and the State Department is working to provide consular support.
The soldier is just one of several Americans who are detained in Russia.
Russian President Vladimir Putin today said that he's not ruling out dialogue with the West. He made remarks as he took the oath for a new six-year term.
Putin says he's open to strengthening good relations with all countries that see Russia as a reliable and honest partner.
He said dialogue is, quote, possible, but not from a position of force. He added that any discussions must be done as equals, respecting each other's interests.
Putin said Western countries have to choose whether they'll continue what he called a policy of aggression.
Two Ukrainian security officials allegedly planned to kill President Volodymyr Zelensky. The two men were colonels in Ukraine's State Guard service. Ukraine says they leaked classified information to Moscow.
Then the two were allegedly tasked with finding someone close to the presidential guard who would take Zelensky hostage and later kill him.
One of them is also being charged with aiding in the preparation of a terrorist act. He reportedly received two drones and ammunition from Russia to transfer to an accomplice. The goal was to take out another high-ranking official in an explosion. In the UK, students at Oxford University have set up a pro-Palestinian encampment. They're protesting the war in Gaza following the example of campus demonstrations in the US.
Some faculty members joined the students. They erected dozens of tents outside the Oxford University Museum of Natural History.
The students also listed their demands on a poster. They want the university to divest from Israel and support the rebuilding of education in Gaza. London Mayor Sadiq Khan signed the declaration of office today. That's after being re-elected for a third term.
He claimed over 43% of the vote. The Conservative candidate only got 33%.
London is the latest of several British councils where the Labour Party is defeating the Conservative Party. Some polls predict the party will win the next national election. This would end 14 years of Conservative government in Britain. And the personal information of Britain's armed forces have been hacked. British media says the hackers are linked to China. British officials said today that the names and bank details of thousands of serving British soldiers, sailors, and Air Force members have been exposed. In a few cases, addresses may also have been exposed.
The British Defense Secretary is expected to make a statement later today about and lay out a multi-point plan to support and protect affected service members. Earlier this year, the U.S. and the U.K. charged seven hackers linked to China. They were accused of targeting U.S. officials, journalists, among others. German authorities raided a European Parliament member's office in Brussels. It's related to an aide who was accused of spying for China.
Jian Ji, the aide to Maximilian Krah of the right-wing Alternative for Germany party, was arrested last month.
At the time of the arrest, Krah said he learned about it from the media and denied personal wrongdoing.
German prosecutors say authorities searched both Krah's office and that of the former aide.
Krah confirmed the searches and said it didn't affect his work.
And a Chinese fighter jet endangered an Australian military helicopter during a confrontation over the Yellow Sea. That's according to Australian officials. The country's prime minister commented on the incident earlier today.
We have made very strong representations at every level to China about this incident, which we regard as unprofessional and unacceptable. Australian Defence Force personnel were going about their job in international waters, but also in international skies, to support the United Nations in the sanctions that they have against the North Korean regime.
Australia's defense minister said the Chinese Air Force jet dropped flares near an Australian Seahawk helicopter on a routine flight on Saturday. It was part of an operation to enforce sanctions against North Korea.
The helicopter dodged the flares. Australia's Department of Defense said the confrontation put the aircraft and those on board at risk, but no one was hurt. And a knife attack at a hospital in southwestern China today. Local authorities say two people were killed and 21 others injured.
A witness told the Chinese Epoch Times that several people carried out the attack. The victims include three doctors, a baby, and some senior citizens. The witness said one doctor had his face cut 5 times.
Another witness said two suspects were arrested, and a local resident said she heard some suspects are still at large.
The motive behind the attack is unknown. Private gun ownership is illegal in China. However, the country has seen a series of knife attacks in recent years, including several at elementary schools. And turning now to India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi cast his vote as phase three of the country's massive general election kicks off. Voting today will cover 93 seats in 11 states and territories, with some western and southern states holding almost half these seats.
So far, voting has taken place for over half of parliament's 543 elected seats. Modi is seeking a rare third term.
He's running for the Hindu Nationalist Party. Over 24 opposition parties are running against him.
Despite this, surveys suggest he will win a comfortable majority. The country's elections began on April 19th. It will continue in 7 phases before ballots are counted on June 4th.
And Thailand's new ministers gathered in Bangkok for a group photo after Prime Minister's recent cabinet reshuffle.
A retired diplomat was appointed as the new foreign minister after his predecessor resigned.
The former foreign minister was known for his role in securing the release of the Thai hostages held by Hamas in Gaza.
The shakeup is significant as Thailand focuses on diplomatic efforts amid escalating conflicts in neighboring Burma, also known as Myanmar.
Coming up, centuries-old music remains a part of modern life. More on a traditional woodwind instrument in Azerbaijan and Turkey that just made the UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage.
And today marks the 200th anniversary of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. To celebrate, Berlin displays the original score annotated by Beethoven himself. We'll check it out shortly here on NTD News Today.
A traditional woodwind instrument in Azerbaijan and Turkey was recently added to the UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage. The music plays an important cultural role and is often performed at folk festivals, weddings, and concerts. NTD's Andrew Thomas has the details.
In the past, musicians learned to play the balaban by listening to the old masters. Now this centuries-old instrument is part of modern life, taught at high schools, universities, and conservatories in Azerbaijan.
From antiquity to this day, this tool has been used. Thankfully, in recent times, we have already been using it in a broader modern form of education.
Ilham Najafov has taught hundreds of students. Some of his pupils have won prizes at international competitions.
Our students have been growing in this area for many years. There are those who have completed a master's degree. In addition, our students also won grand prizes in domestic and international competitions.
This second-year conservatory student has been in love with the balaban since childhood.
I chose this instrument because the balaban instrument has a softer sound, and I like the technique and sound more. The other instruments are also beautiful, but for me, the sound of the balaban instrument is more pleasant.
The balaban is one of the oldest woodwind instruments in Azerbaijan. It also plays a significant role in the music culture of Turkey. In December 2023, the balaban was added to the UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage.
There is an archaeological find with a history of about 2,500 years. There's an area called Black Hill near Bargashad village of Ujar region in Azerbaijan. Archaeologists found a silver ring there, and the image of a balaban singer was engraved on the silver ring.
The instrument is traditionally made of plum or apricot wood and coated with linseed or olive oil. Once dry, crafters drill several holes into the instrument.
Making a balaban instrument is usually not a long process. First, when preparing, it is important to cut the apricot tree. By cutting an apricot tree in the autumn, you can see if it has worms. After cutting the tree, it should be stored so that the cut part does not crack. If it cracks, it will be useless.
Interest in the instrument has gone up, and experts hope the UNESCO title will further help the art form endure. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
Today marks the 200th anniversary of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. To celebrate, Berlin's State Library is displaying the original score annotated by Beethoven himself. NTD's Andrew Thomas has more on the music, complete with traces of the composition process.
Beethoven's Ninth Symphony made its world premiere on May 7, 1824 in Vienna. Berlin Library restorer Margaret Polasek says that displaying original Beethoven writings like these mark a special occasion.
They are not exhibited very often because they are Beethoven's own writings. They are only shown every few years on special occasions, either here in our house or in the context of exhibitions on request that they are then actually shown in other places, but usually at intervals of several years.
Since its premiere, the Ninth Symphony and its famous finale and fourth movement, the Ode to Joy, have resounded across the world to mark special occasions. It is the anthem of Europe, was performed after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and is often heard at peace protests. One of the library books is the complete score of the Ninth Symphony. Then there are several smaller booklets and Beethoven's actual notes.
So the thicker book is the complete score of the Ninth Symphony. And then there are several smaller booklets that are called fascicles, which are centered around certain smaller sections of the score, but also Beethoven's autograph.
Ludwig von Beethoven died in 1827 at age 56 in Vienna. But exhibits like these ensure that the composer's music lives on. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
This next story is interesting. A 101-year-old American Airlines passenger is feeling young again. According to the BBC, an error in the carrier's booking system makes her show up as a 2-year-old child.
Patricia is a baby in the eyes of American Airlines. That's because the carrier isn't able to calculate that the centenarian was born in 1922, not 2022.
However, the system error is making air travel somewhat difficult.
In one instance, she couldn't fly because the airline was only prepared to accommodate an infant.
Nevertheless, she plans to keep flying.
For round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at NTD.com or download our NTD app.
And be sure to stick around for NTD Newsroom at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll cover more stories from the U.S. and around the world.